Amen. Nehemiah chapter 11, we read in the verse 1 of that chapter, verse 1, we read, "And the rulers of the people dwelt at Jerusalem. The rest of the people also cast lots to bring one of 10 to dwell in Jerusalem, the holy city, and 9 parts to dwell in other cities. In Flanders fields the poppies blow, between the crosses row on row, that mark our place and in the sky. The larks still bravely singing, fly scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead, short days ago. We lived, we felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we die in Flanders fields." I'm sure that some of you, or if not all of you, are familiar with Flanders Field. The area of Flanders, of course, it is that area where there was a great loss of life in World War I in northern France. It is said that after the bodies were buried there in Flanders Field, that there were poppies that sprung forth in that field. Today we wear the poppy still to commemorate the loss of those who give their lives so that we might be free. And today, if you were to go to Flanders Field, as it were, there is a memorial to all those that died in battle. If you were to visit that area, there is one in France and also in America. There you would be confronted by little wooden crosses standing in rows, which stand as a memory of the countless and in some cases nameless people who give themselves wholeheartedly to the cause of liberty and freedom. And I suggest to you this morning that here in Nehemiah chapter 11, we have really a Flanders Field of the Bible. Nehemiah here, he recognizes, he remembers, he records countless unknowns who willingly gave themselves to further the Lord's cause in Jerusalem. You remember in chapter 7 what Nehemiah did. Nehemiah, he had become the governor. And you'll remember how he took a census of the people. He realized that the large area of Jerusalem, upon taking that census, it needed a drastic repopulation. But as he was just about to do this and try and repopulate the area, we then saw in chapters 8, 9 and 10 that this was interrupted by a month of spiritual festivities. There you'll remember the Ezra, he taught the people, and they celebrated the Feast of Tabernacles, the Day of Atonement, and another feast as well. And now we find Nehemiah, he's recommencing what he has left in chapter 7. Here in this chapter, he is doing that work of reinforcing and repopulating the city. Under God, the work had greatly progressed. It had started, you remember, chapter 2, as Nehemiah arrived in Jerusalem. He really was confronted by a big pile of rubble. And what did Nehemiah, under the help of the Lord, do? He saw it progress. He saw the walls erected. He saw gates placed upon the walls. But now we find that as the work was now finished, these walls and also the witness of the city, it needed protection. And here Nehemiah, what does he do? He records those workers who willingly gave themselves to strengthen and fortify the witness of the walls of Jerusalem. And as well as construction, the work of Christ, it needs fortification. It needs, as it were, to be reinforced, and it needs to be repopulated. Oh yes, it's good to get things off the ground. It's good, as it were, to start things. And you think of 50 years ago, that's exactly what the Lord did here in this city. He got the work off the ground. But now the work is different. Now the work, it needs reinforcement. It needs establishment. It needs fortification. And the Lord, as it were, is telling us here in this 50th year of our anniversary, that we are to fortify, that we are to strengthen, that we are to, as it were, buttress the work of God. Isn't it good to think that here, even though we've been tearing through this list of names, Nehemiah didn't see them as that. Nehemiah, he saw them as those who willingly gave themselves. And what does Nehemiah do? He records them. He records exactly what they did. He records how they established, how they strengthened, how they fortified the testimony of the Lord through the erection and the establishment of these walls. Indeed, in Psalm 68, we read in verse 28, God hath commanded thy strength. Strengthen that which thou hast wrought. And the psalmist here in prayer, he lifts up his heart and he says, oh God, strengthen that which you have wrought. In other words, he was saying, Lord, you have created many things, and Lord, you have drawn me to yourself. Now, Lord, strengthen me. Strengthen that which thou hast begun. You see, the Lord wants us to be ready, not reticent. To be ready and willing to fortify, to strengthen the cause of Jesus Christ. There are some things that, as it were, need construction. They need, as it were, off the ground. But there are other things where it needs strengthening. There are other areas of the work that need fortification, that need you to come and, as it were, to lend your shoulder to that aspect of the work. I wonder today, as Nehemiah remembered, as it were, these Flanders, the Flanders field of the Bible, as you remembered those who gave themselves willingly to strengthen the work, wonder, will you be one of those? Will you be one of those who give yourself to strengthen, to prop up, to fortify the work? And here this morning, I want us just simply to consider willing workers wanted. Willing workers wanted. And I want us to highlight four areas in the lives of these people that gave themselves to strengthen the cause of the Lord. I want you to see firstly here, and thinking of willing workers wanted, that there were those who willingly lived. Those who willingly lived. Verse 1 we read, the rulers of the people dwelt at Jerusalem. The rest of the people also cast lots to bring 1 of 10 to dwell in Jerusalem, the holy city, and 9 parts to dwell in other cities. In the opening few verses, you're really given a survey of the population of Jerusalem. You remember how Nehemiah did the census in chapter 7? Well, Nehemiah here, he's really summing that up. He's summing up those who had returned from Babylon to Jerusalem. He speaks here of the rulers who dwelt at Jerusalem. In other words, they lived there. Whenever work recommenced, the work of constructing the walls, there were those who willingly moved to Jerusalem at that time. Then in verse 4, we read at Jerusalem, dwelt certain of the children of Judah and of the children of Benjamin. These were individuals who were descendants of Pharez. And as there were those who returned from the captivity, Nehemiah, he's recording here, there were those who willingly lived in Jerusalem. There were others like priests and Levites and porters and singers. You see, they realized that they had to return to the place where their forefathers had left. 70 years had now passed, and their forefathers, they were there, but they were taken to captivity. And so they realized they had to be in the right place with the right people. Jerusalem was to be their resident city. I suggest to you, when they first came back to Jerusalem, there wouldn't have been much to attract them, would there? Remember how there were 3 groups of returners spanning many, many years. We saw that in our introductory studies. Whenever they came back, firstly, there was no temple. And also, there was no walls. There was nothing to attract these original returners to come back to Jerusalem. Really, it was just a heap of rubbish. But Nehemiah records that there were those. And there were those who despite the lack of attraction, and despite the seeming lack of things externally to attract them to come back to Jerusalem, Nehemiah records that they lived there. He recorded their names. He records that they came back to Jerusalem. And in the Lord's house, We are to be present, not absent. We are to be physically present in the house of God. You think especially of this day. It's the Sabbath day. And we saw last week in our studies how the Lord expects us to keep the Sabbath day and to reverence that day. Well, I say to you that you will be missed, as it were, if you don't come. And not only will you be missed, but you will be missing out. As you come to the house of God, you yourself are blessed. You praise the Lord as you ponder the Lord, as you're under the instruction of the Lord, as you hear His word and hear His will, then you're blessed. Can I also say that merely by your presence in the house of God, you're an example. You're an example to those around you. You're an example to those in society. You're an example to even those across the road who are doing their shopping. And even by coming here and you're simply your presence, you are an example also to your family. Also by your presence here, you show how serious you take the work of God. And so I'm saying to you, never underestimate the importance of simply being in the house of God, no matter what the service is. Whether it be morning worship, whether it be the evening gospel service, whether it be in the prayer meeting or any other meeting of the church, the Lord's saying that He remembers. He remembers when we're in the place. He remembers when we're in the right place with the right people. But you will discover that there were those who weren't living in Jerusalem. Whenever those original returners came, there were those and they didn't come back to Jerusalem. They didn't commit themselves to Jerusalem. Didn't have the prestige. And it was just easier to live somewhere else. Verse 1, Nehemiah records the rest of the people. And he then records those who didn't return to Jerusalem at first. Again, Paul reminding us of this. He stated in Hebrews 10, verse 25, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another. And it seems in the assembly there were those who regularly didn't attend the assembly of the house of God. And we are not to forsake the house of God, but rather we are to be found in the house of God. We are to be literally and physically present here. I suggest to you that this group of returners, when they first came from Babylon, would be much easier to stay in Babylon. They would have had a nicer life. It would have been an inconvenience to return to Jerusalem. And just as it is here in this text, so sometimes it can be in life. Sometimes it's much more convenient not to come to the service of the Lord. But the Lord is teaching us here the importance of being in the right place with the right people. The Lord's teaching you that. He's teaching you that this morning. You know, there was a church member who was 100 years old. His local church decided that because this was such a landmark occasion in his life, that they would have a special celebration for him for his birthday. He had faithfully attended there from he was reared, and so they decided they would recognize this. On that occasion, there were many there, many friends, many family. And during the celebration, his great-grandson was there. His great-grandson, in making a tribute to his father, he asked him this question. He said, Granda, we all know you can barely hear. We all know you can barely walk. And we all know that you can barely see. Why do you still come to the house of God? And he said, I come because I love Christ with all my heart. And because Christ has commanded me to be here. And I ask you this morning, have you the same level of commitment? There were those, and they willingly lived. They willingly lived in Jerusalem. Nehemiah recorded that they were in the right place with the right people. There were those who willingly lived. But I want you to also see, secondly, there were those who willingly moved. Moved. Verse 2 we read, and the people blessed all the men that willingly offered themselves to dwell at Jerusalem. Now in chapter 7 verse 4, when Nehemiah was doing his census, he stated this, He stated, "The city was large and great, but the people were few therein, and the houses were not builded." Whenever Nehemiah had reconstructed the walls of Jerusalem, you imagine it. He recorded there were some 49,000 people living there. But he states there's a lot of open space and there's no houses. So it seems that Nehemiah here in this chapter, after realizing that Jerusalem needed to be repopulated, that he issued, as it were, a call. A call to come and to repopulate Jerusalem to the cities and villages around. And whenever the call came, there were those who willingly moved. They moved from the little areas, from the little hamlets, the little country areas, as it were, around Jerusalem. They willingly offered themselves to live in Jerusalem. Now you think about that. And I trust that that you understand this. They would have been very, very used to their lifestyle. The country lifestyle, that quiet lifestyle. They would have been very, very used to living that quiet, that peaceable life. It would have been an inconvenience for them to come and live in the city. I'm sure you know exactly what I mean. But nevertheless, they came. What a sacrifice. They came to a city that perhaps they had never visited before in their lifetimes. They had no housing. They were confronted by an awful lot of work still to do, and yet they willingly sacrificed their personal contentment, their personal circumstances, to move to Jerusalem and maintain the witness of the city. And as a Christian, we are to be sacrificial, not selfish, to do what we can to support the cause of Christ. Now, this at times means sacrifice. Just as the people there, as they sacrificed themselves, so whenever Christ saves you, as he gave himself for you, he does expect that you give yourself to him. Sometimes that means that we have to relinquish, to renounce, to resign certain things, certain areas, certain aspects of our lives. That when you think of Christ, when you think of his sacrifice, when you think of the fact that he came willingly, he came voluntarily to this earth, he took upon himself the form of a servant, he was made like unto his brethren, made like humans, didn't have to, but he willingly came to pay the price of your redemption. And surely the sentiment rises in our hearts. Should we not be willing? Should we not be willing to sacrifice for him? Should we not be willing to renounce, to as it were, relinquish maybe a little thing or a certain area in our life to come and to strengthen, to fortify his cause, the cause of Jesus Christ? Indeed, in Exodus, whenever the tabernacle was being erected, we read in Exodus 35, verse 22, "And they came, both men and women, as many as were willing-hearted, and brought bracelets and earrings and rings and tablets, all jewels of gold." In this chapter, you read of the construction of the tabernacle. And we find that, yes, there were those who helped build the tabernacle, but there were then those who gave. They gave things that were precious to them. They gave items of jewelry. They gave earrings. They gave bracelets. And they gave that willingly. Notice what it says there. As many as were willing-hearted. They were willing-hearted, they gave all of these things for the work of the Lord. And rather than being stout-hearted, we are to be soft-hearted, to be willing to sacrifice all for the cause of Christ. I wonder this morning of your heart, like these in Jerusalem, those who moved house, willingly left their little hamlets, their little villages, those who moved to the big city, those who had no house, those who had to start from scratch. Put yourself there. Imagine that it had to happen to you. And I wonder if you see him, the same measure of sacrifice, the same measure of surrender, the same measure of submission to the cause of Christ. C.T. Studd, he had the world at his feet. In the late 1800s, as a young 20-year-old, he was playing for England. He was playing cricket for England. He was playing in what is now the equivalent of the ashes. But the Lord came to him. The Lord saved him through the witness of his brother passing away. And he found that he had to give up everything. He gave it all up and he went to China. And then in his mid-50s, he returned to home. And then in his late 50s, he went to Africa, all to be a missionary for Christ. Of course, C.T. Studd is credited by saying this: "If Jesus Christ be God and died for me, then no sacrifice is too great for me to make for him." I wonder this morning if you're the same spirit. If Christ died for me, if Christ gave himself for me, will I not die for him? Die to all of my self-will, all of my self-hopes, all of my plans. Will I not die and sacrifice them for him? There were those who willingly lived. There were those who willingly moved. I want you to see thirdly here that there were those who willingly labored. Verse 12 we read, "And their brethren that did the work of the house were 822. You probably passed by that this morning in the reading, but take some time just to think about it. 822 people that did the work of the house. That means the house of the Lord. That means they faithfully supported the temple with their gifts. They had certain talents, and it's recorded here that they gave their talents to the service of the temple. Verses 10 to 14, Nehemiah, he records all of the priests. And then in verses 15 to 17, he records all of the Levites. The Levites, they had the task of supervising the outside of the house of God. There was much to do, there was much to plan, there was much to organize. And so Nehemiah records that they did this type of work. Also Levites, they handled civil affairs and they judged. And they also counseled all outside the house of God. Nehemiah records this. He records those who did inside work in the house of God and those who did outside work for the house of God. Verse 23, he also mentions singers. And in verse 19, he mentions porters. Singers, of course, sang in the temple. And porters, they were known for carrying things and also for guarding the gates. What Nehemiah recorded was there was many, many different jobs. Priests, Levites. There were those who sang. There were those who labored manually. But it didn't matter. Nehemiah, he recorded those who willingly used their talents in the service of God. And rather than undervaluing your talents, you are to use your talents, to use them in the service of God. Wonder's the Lord given you a little gift, little talent. Doesn't matter what it is. No matter how seemingly small you see it. Often that's the case, isn't it? We tend to undervalue what we can give to the Lord. And it doesn't matter how big or how small, how little or how large you may think. The Lord, he wants you to give it. To give it willingly to him. To use it for his glory. Whether it be a manual talent, whether it be a musical talent, whether it be the gift of speaking or the gift of sharing or even the gift of sympathizing. Many, many different things you can do for the house of the Lord. But I wonder, are you willing to use that talent for him? In Philippians 2:25, Paul, he's writing to the church there at Philippi. And he writes this. He states, "I supposed it necessary to send you Epaphroditus, my brother and companion in labor and fellow soldier, but your messenger." Now, what does this man do? Well, he goes on to say, "and that he ministered to my wants." Paul told the church at Philippi of a man named Epaphroditus. Who was Epaphroditus? Well, towards the end of his life, when Paul was in Rome, Paul was imprisoned. And Paul got very, very sick whenever he was in prison. And there was this man, Epaphroditus. What did he do? He made a long journey up to Rome, and Paul says he ministered to my wants. In other words, he visited him whenever he was very, very sick. And Paul, what does he say concerning this man? He says he was my companion in labor. You see, he saw that as labor. He saw that as service for Christ. And service for the Lord is not restricted It's plenteous. There are many ways, both seen and unseen, in which you can serve Jesus. The question is not, the question is then, are you willing? Are you willing? No matter how big, how small, whether it's seen, whether it's unseen, are you willing to serve the Lord, to wholeheartedly give yourself in whatever way possible? Whether it be carrying, caring, sharing or serving or speaking. The Lord, he simply wants you to be willing. He doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called. And just as there were singers and carriers and outer workers and inner workers in the temple, there are also many things that you can do for Christ, but are you willing? Are you willing to do them? There were those who willingly lived, there were those who willingly moved, there were those who willingly labored, but I want you to see lastly that there were those who willingly prayed. Verse 17 we read, Mattaniah the son of Micah, the son of Zabdi, the son of Asaph, was the principal to begin the thanksgiving in prayer. There were morning and evening sacrifices in the temple. And in these sacrifices, there was prayer offered. And what does Nehemiah do? He records the work of Mattaniah. You probably had never heard of Mattaniah in the Bible, but Nehemiah had heard of him. And Nehemiah records the very, very simple, but very, very important work that he did. What was the work that he did? Well, it seems that at the daily sacrifice, Mattaniah was the one who gave thanks. Mattaniah was the one who prayed the blessing over the sacrifice. Now, there was many things that Mattaniah couldn't do. He wasn't a priest. He wasn't a singer. He wasn't an ethnonym. He didn't carry water. Perhaps there was only one thing that Mattaniah could do. But Nehemiah records it anyway. Because it was a vital, important work. It was the work of prayer. And yes, there were those who manually worked, and there were those who musically worked, but there were also Mattaniah who was upholding the whole thing in prayer. And as well as serving the Lord with your presence, you can also serve him by your prayers. You can pray for the work of God. And there is always activity in the house of God. Just as it was in the temple in the Old Testament, so it is in the New Testament. There is activity. There's much busyness. There's life. There's things to do. But you know, we need those who will, like Mattaniah, who will uphold the work in prayer. I wonder today, will you do that? Wonder, will you, like Mattaniah, will you uphold the work in prayer? You say to me, there's many things, preacher, I can't do. I'm not perhaps as able as I once was. Well, I say there's definitely one thing that you can do, and that's uphold the cause of Christ in prayer. Never despise the ministry of prayer. You know, in 1793, the Baptist Missionary Society, they met together to discuss William Carey's potential going to India. Someone said, there's a gold mine in India, but it seems as deep as the center of the earth. Who will venture to explore it? What they were saying is, there are many souls to be won in India. Who will go and who will find it? And at that meeting, William Carey stood up and he says, I will go down, but you must hold the rope. And as there are those who go down and seek to unearth the minds of Christ and his blood-bought people, there are those who need to hold the ropes. There are those who, and we need you to pray for us. Willing workers wanted. Just four areas of these, the people's lives in which they willingly gave themselves for the cause of Christ. May God help us to be a willing worker for him.